Hi, this is Mrs. English. Thank you for joining me again. What a privilege to finish up Homer's Iliad, the Richmond Lattimore translation, and we are finally at Book 24. Book 23 ended with the funeral games for Patroclus. You notice that all of those games were Olympian-style games. They're all designed to prep a warrior, to prepare him for battle, to be a better warrior. And so they're concentrating on speed, running, and upper body skills. All of those games. And the games broke up, and the people scattered to go away, each man to his fast-running ship, and the rest of them took thought of their dinner and of sweet sleep and its enjoyment. Only Achilles wept still as he remembered his beloved companion. Nor did sleep, who subdues all, come over him. But he tossed from one side to the other in longing for Patroclus, for his manhood and his great strength, and all the actions he had seen to the end with him, and the hardships he had suffered, the wars of men, hard crossing of the big waters. Remembering all these things, he let fall the swelling tears, lying sometimes along his side, sometimes on his back, and now again prone on his face. Then he would stand upright and pace, turning in distraction along the beach of the sea. Nor did dawn rising escape him as she brightened across the sea and the beaches. Then, when he had yoked running horses under the chariot, he would fasten Hector behind the chariot so as to drag him, line 15, and draw him three times around the tomb of Menoetius' fallen son, Patroclus, then rest again in his shelter and throw down the dead man and leave him to lie sprawled on his face in the dust. But Apollo had pity on him, though he was only a dead man, and guarded the body from all ugliness and hid all of it under the golden Aegis so that it might not be torn when Achilles dragged it. So Achilles, in his standing fury, outraged great Hector. The blessed gods, as they looked upon him, were filled with compassion and kept urging the clear-sighted Argiphontes to steal the body. Who's Argiphontes? Of course, this is Hermes or Mercury. This was pleasing to all the others, but never to Hera, line 25, nor Poseidon, nor the girl of the gray eyes, Athena, who kept still their hatred for sacred Ilion, as in the beginning, and for Priam and his people, because of the delusion of Paris, who insulted the goddesses when they came to him in his courtyard and favored her who supplied the lust that led to disaster. Recognize in those lines, line 29 and 30, the people of Troy are still, Paris is still deluded, and he is the one who insulted the goddesses. Who did he insult when they came to him in his courtyard and favored her who supplied the lust that led to disaster? He favored Aphrodite. He did not favor Hera or Athena. But now, as it was the 12th dawn after the death of Hector, Phoebus Apollo spoke his word out among the immortals. You are hard, you gods, and destructive. And now did not Hector burn 5 pieces of oxen and unblemished goats in your honor? Now you cannot bring yourselves to save him, though he is only a corpse, for his wife to look upon, his child and his mother, and Priam his father, and his people, who presently thereafter would burn his body in the fire and give him the rites of burial. No, you gods, your desire is to help this cursed Achilles, within whose breast there are no feelings of justice, nor can his mind be bent, but his purposes are fierce, like a lion, who, when he has given way to his own great strength and his haughty spirit, goes among the flocks of men to devour them. So Achilles has destroyed pity, and there is not in him any shame, line 45, which does much harm to men, but profits them also. For a man must someday lose one who was even closer than this, a brother from the same womb, or a son, and yet he weeps for him and sorrows for him, and then it's over. For the destinies, the fates, put in mortal men the heart of endurance. So someone dies even closer than Patroclus is to Achilles, and you do mourn, but you get over it. But this man, line 50, now he's torn the heart of life from great Hector, ties him to his horses, and drags him around his beloved companion's tomb, and nothing is gained thereby for his good or his honor, great as he is. Let him take care not to make us angry, for see, he does dishonor to the dumb earth in his fury. All right, he is dishonoring the dumb earth and Hector's body. Then bitterly Hera of the White Arms answered him, saying, What you have said could be true, Lord of the Silver Bow, only if you give Hector such pride of place as you give to Achilles. But Hector was mortal, and suckled at the breast of a woman, while Achilles is the child of a goddess, one whom I myself nourished and brought up, and gave her as bride to her husband Peleus, one dear to the hearts of the immortals. For you all went, you gods, to the wedding, and you two feasted among them and held your lyre, O friend of the evil, faithless forever. In turn, Zeus, who gathers the clouds, spoke to her in answer. Hera, be not utterly angry with the gods, for there shall not be the same pride of place given both. Yet Hector also was loved by the gods, best of all the mortals in Ilion. I loved him too. He never failed of gifts to my liking. Never yet has my altar gone without fair sacrifice, the smoke and the savor of it, since that is our portion of honor, line 70. The stealing of him we will dismiss, for it is not possible to take bold Hector secretly from Achilles, since always his mother is near him night and day. But it would be better if one of the gods would summon Thetis here to my presence, so that I can say a close word to her, and see that Achilles is given gifts by Priam and gives back the body of Hector. He spoke, and Iris, storm-footed, sprang away with the message, and at a point between Samos and Imbrus of the high cliffs plunged in the deep water, and the sea, so she jumps in, and the sea crashed moaning about her. She plummeted to the sea floor like a lead weight, which, mounted along the horn of an ox who ranges the fields, goes downward and takes death with it to the raw, ravening fish. She found Thetis in the hollow of her cave, and gathered about her sat the rest of the sea goddesses, and she in their midst was mourning the death of her blameless son, who so soon was destined to die in Troy of the rich soil, far from the land of his fathers. Iris the swift-foot came close beside her and spoke to her. Rise, Thetis. Zeus, whose purposes are infinite, calls you. In turn, Thetis the goddess, the silver-footed, answered her. What does he, the great god, want with me? I feel shamefast to mingle with the immortals, and my heart is confused with sorrows. But I will go. No word shall be in vain if he says it. So she spoke, and shining among the divinities, took up her black veil, and there is no darker garment. This is, in early Greek epic, only Thetis and Demeter, who does this for Persephone, wear this black veil. And there is mention of it in the Homeric Hymn to Demeter, the Hymn to Demeter, number 42. And of course, she wears this for Persephone, who's gone down into Hades, into darkness. And here we have Achilles' mother, Thetis, wearing this black veil, and there is no darker garment. Thetis has gone into mourning for her son, and he's still alive. She went on her way, and in front of her, rapid, wind-footed Iris guided her, and the wave of the water opened about them, so they break through the water. They stepped out on dry land and swept to the sky. Now they're flying. There they found the son of Cronos of the wide brows, and gathered about him sat all the rest of the gods, the blessed who live forever. Line 100. She sat down beside Father Zeus, and Athena made a place for her. Hera put into her hand a beautiful golden goblet, and spoke to her to comfort her, and Thetis, accepting, drank from it. The father of gods and men began the discourse among them. You have come to Olympus, divine Thetis, for all your sorrow, with an unforgotten grief in your heart. I myself know this, but even so I will tell you why I summoned you hither. For 9 days there has risen a quarrel among the immortals over the body of Hector, and Achilles, stormer of cities. They keep urging clear-sighted Argiphontes, Hermes, to steal the body. Okay, Hermes is best at stealing. Line 110. But I still put upon Achilles the honor that he has, guarding your reverence and your love for me into time afterward. Go then in all speed to the encampment, and give to your son this message. Tell him that the gods frown upon him, that beyond all other immortals I myself am angered, that in his heart's madness he holds Hector beside the curved ships, and did not give him back. Perhaps in fear of me he will give back Hector. Then I will send Iris to Priam of the Great Heart with an order to ransom his dear son, going down to the ships of the Achaeans and bringing gifts to Achilles, which might soften his anger. That was line 119. And so he will send Iris to tell Priam, go, you know, take money, gold, whatever you want, go to the Greek camp. The Trojan king will go to the Greek camp and try to get his son's body back. Line 120. He spoke, and the goddess, Silverfoot Thetis, did not disobey him, but descended in a flash of speed from the peaks of Olympus, and made her way to the shelter of her son, and there found him in close lamentation, and his beloved companions about him were busy at their work, and made ready the morning meal, and there stood a great fleecy sheep being sacrificed in the shelter. His honored mother came close to him and sat down beside him, and stroked him with her hand and called him by name, and spoke to him, "My child, how long will you go on eating your heart out in sorrow and lamentation, and remember neither your food nor going to bed?" Line 130. "It is a good thing even to lie with a woman in love, for you will not be with me long, but already death and powerful destiny stand closely about you. But listen hard to me, for I come from Zeus with a message. He says that the gods frown upon you, that beyond all other immortals he himself is angered, that in your heart's madness you hold Hector beside the curved ships, and did not redeem him. Come then, give him up, and accept ransom for the body." Then in turn, Achilles of the swift feet answered her, "So be it. He can bring the ransom and take off the body, if the Olympian himself so urgently bids it." Line 140. So, where the ships were drawn together, the son and his mother conversed at long length in winged words. But the son of Cronos stirred Iris to go down to sacred Ilion, saying, "Go forth, Iris the Swift, leaving your place on Olympus, and go to Priam of the Great Heart within Ilion. Tell him to ransom his dear son, going down to the ships of the Achaeans, and bringing gifts to Achilles which might soften his anger alone. Let no other man of the Trojans go with him, but only let one elder herald attend him, one who can manage the mules and the easy-running wagon, so he can carry the dead man, whom great Achilles slew, back to the city. Let death not be a thought in his heart. Let him have no fear. Such an escort shall I send to guide him, Argifontes, Hermes, who shall lead him until he brings him to Achilles. And after he has brought him inside the shelter of Achilles, neither will the man himself kill him, but will hold back all the others, for he is no witless man, nor unwatchful, nor is he wicked, but will, in all kindness, spare one who comes to him as a suppliant." So Zeus is sending Iris to go tell Priam, "Do not be afraid to come all by yourself, the king of Troy, down to the beach, through the Greeks' camp, and go to Achilles' tent, alone, with a wagon and one elderly attendant." He spoke, and storm-footed Iris swept away with the message and came from to the house of Priam. There she found outcry and mourning. Line 160. The sons, sitting around their father inside the courtyard, made their clothes sodden with their tears, and among them the old man sat veiled, beaten into his mantle. Dung lay thick on the head and neck of the aged man, for he had been rolling in it. He had gathered and smeared it on with his hands, and his daughters all up and down the house, and the wives of his sons, were mourning as they remembered all those men in their numbers and valor who lay dead, their lives perished at the hands of the Argives. The messenger of Zeus stood beside Priam and spoke to him in a small voice, and yet the shivers took hold of his body. Line 170. "Take heart, Priam, son of Dardanus, do not be frightened. I come to you not eyeing you with evil intention, but with the purpose of good toward you. I am a messenger of Zeus, who far away cares much for you and is pitiful. The Olympian orders you to ransom Hector the Brilliant, to bring gifts to Achilles, which may soften his anger alone. Alone, let no other man of the Trojans go with you, but only let one elder herald attend you, one who can manage the mules and the easily running wagon, so he can carry the dead man, whom great Achilles slew, back to the city. Let death not be a thought in your heart. You need have no fear. Such an escort shall go with you to guide you, Argifontes, this is Hermes, who will lead you till he brings you to Achilles. And after he has brought you inside the shelter of Achilles, neither will the man himself, 185, kill you, but he will hold back all the others, For he is no witless man, nor unwatchful, nor is he wicked, but will in all kindness spare one who comes to him as a suppliant. So Iris the swift-footed spoke, and went away from him. Thereupon he ordered his sons to make ready the easily rolling mule wagon, line 190, and to fasten upon it the carrying basket. He himself went into the storeroom, which was fragrant, and of cedar and high ceilings, with many bright treasures inside it. He called out to Hecabe, his wife, and said to her, "Dear wife, a messenger came to me from Zeus on Olympus, that I must go to the ships of the Achaeans and ransom my dear son, bringing gifts to Achilles which may soften his anger. Come then, tell me, what does it seem best to your own mind for me to do? My heart, my strength are terribly urgent that I go there to the ships within the wide army of the Achaeans." So he spoke, and his wife cried out aloud, and you can imagine, for her to think of the king of Troy going to the Greek camp at night. So he spoke, and his wife cried out aloud and answered him, "Ah me, where has that wisdom gone for which you were famous in time before among outlanders and those you rule over? How can you wish to go alone to the ships of the Achaeans, the Greeks, before the eyes of a man who has slaughtered in such numbers such brave sons of yours? The heart of you is iron, for if he has you within his grasp and lays eyes upon you, that man who is savage and not to be trusted will not take pity upon you, nor have respect for your rights. Let us sit apart in our palace now and weep for Hector, and the way at the first strong destiny spun with his lifeline when he was born." So that's what they want to do, weep and think how bad it was, the way strong destiny spun his life. "When I gave birth to him, that the dogs with their shifting feet should feed on him, far from his parents, gone down before a stronger man. I wish I could set teeth in the middle of his liver and eat it. That would be vengeance for what he did to my son, for he slew him when he was no coward, but standing before the men of Troy and the deep-girdled women of Troy, with no thought in his mind of flight or withdrawal." Line 216. In turn, the aged Priam, the godlike, answered her, saying, "Do not hold me back when I would be going. Neither yourself be a bird of bad omen in my palace. You will not persuade me. If it had been some other who ordered me, one of the mortals, one of those who are soothsayers or priests or diviners, I might have called it a lie, and we might rather have rejected it. But now, for I myself heard the god and looked straight upon her, I am going, and this word shall not be in vain. If it is my destiny to die there by the ships of the bronze-armored Achaeans, then I wish that. Achilles can slay me at once, with my own son caught in my arms, once I have my fill of mourning above him." He spoke, and lifted back the fair covering of his clothes chest, and from inside took out 12 robes, surpassingly lovely, and 12 mantles, this would be like a cape, 12 mantles to be worn single, as many blankets, as many great white cloaks, also came also the same number of tunics, so 12 of everything. He weighed and carried out 10 full talents of gold, and brought forth 2 shining tripods and 4 cauldrons, and brought out a goblet of surpassing loveliness that the men of Thrace had given him when he went to them with a message. But now the old man spared not even this in his halls, so much was it his heart's desire to ransom back his beloved son. But he drove off the Trojans all from his cloister walks. This would be the covered outdoor hallway along the buildings outside. From his cloister walks, scolding them with words of revilement. "Get out, you failures, you disgraces! Have you not also mourning in your own home, at home, that you can come to me with your sorrows? Is it not enough that Zeus, son of Cronos, have given me sorrow of losing the best of my sons? You also shall be aware of this, since you will be all the easier for the Achaeans to slaughter now that he's dead. But for me, before my eyes look upon this city as it is destroyed and its people are slaughtered, my wish is to go sooner down to the house of the death god." He spoke, and went after the men with a stick. So he chases them out with a stick. And they fled outside before the fury of the old man. He was scolding his children and cursing Helenus and Paris, Agathon the Brilliant, Pammon and Antiphonus, Polites of the great war cry, Deiphobus and Hippothous and proud Dios. There were 9 sons to whom now the old man gave orders and spoke to them roughly. "Make haste, wicked children, my disgraces. I wish all of you had been killed beside the running ships in the place of Hector." Line 255. Ah, me, for my evil destiny. I have had the noblest of sons in Troy, but I say not one of them is left to me. Mestor, like a god, and Troilus, whose delight was in horses, and Hector, who was a god among men, for he did not seem like one who was child of a mortal man, but of a god. All these Ares has killed, and all that are left me are the disgraces, the liars and the dancers, champions of the chorus, the plunderers of their own people in their land of lambs and kids. Well, then, will you not get my wagon ready and be quick about it and put all these things on it so we can get on with our journey? Line 265. So he spoke, and they, in terror at the old man's scolding, hauled out the easy-running wagons for mules, a fine thing, new fabricated, and fastened the carrying basket upon it. They took away from its peg the mule yoke made of boxwood with its massive knob, well fitted with guiding rings, and brought forth the yoke lashing, together with the yoke itself, of 9 cubits, and snuggled it well into place upon the smooth polished wagon pole at the foot of the beam, then slipped the ring over the peg and lashed it with 3 turns on either side to the knob, and afterwards fastened it all in order and secured it under a hooked guard. Line 275. Then they carried out and piled into the smooth polished mule wagon all the unnumbered spoils to be given for the head of Hector, then yoked the powerful footed mules who pulled in the harness, and whom the Mysians gave once as glorious presents to Priam, but for Priam they led under the yoke those horses the old man himself had kept and cared for them at his polished manger. Now in the high house the yoking was done for the herald and Priam, men both with close counsels in their mind. And now came Hecabe with sorrowful heart, and stood close beside them, carrying in her right hand the kind, sweet wine in a golden goblet, so that before they went they might pour a drink offering. She stood in front of the horses, called Priam by name, and spoke to him. Here, pour a libation to Zeus, father, and pray you may come back home again from those who hate you, since it seems the spirit within you drives you upon the ships, though I would not have it. Make your prayer, then, to the dark misted, the son of Cronos on Ida, who looks out on all the Troad, and ask him for a bird of omen, a rapid messenger which to his own mind is dearest of all birds, and his strength is the biggest, one seen on the right, so that once your eyes have rested upon him, you can trust in him and go to the ships of the fast-mounted Danans. Line 295. And so Hecabe's idea is to ask Zeus for an omen, a bird that will kind of lead him there. But if Zeus of the wide brows will not grant you his own messenger, then I, for one, would never urge you on, nor advise you to go to the Argive ships, for all your passion to do it. But then in answer to her again spoke Priam the godlike, My lady, I will not disregard this wherein you urge me. Line 300. It is well to lift hands to Zeus and ask if he will have mercy. The old man spoke and told the housekeeper who attended them to pour unstained water over his hands. She, standing beside them and serving them, held the washing bowl in her hands and a pitcher. He washed his hands and took the cup from his wife. He stood up in the middle of the enclosure and prayed, and poured the wine out, looking up into the sky, and gave utterance and spoke, saying, Father Zeus, watching over us from Ida, most high, most honored, grant that I come to Achilles for love and pity, but send me a bird of omen, a rapid messenger, which to your own mind is dearest of all birds, and his strength is biggest, one seen on the right, so that once my eyes have rested on him, I may trust in him and go to the ships of the fast-mounted Danans. So he spoke in prayer, and Zeus of the councils heard him. Line 315. Straightway he sent down the most lordly of birds, an eagle, the dark one, the marauder, called as well the black eagle, and as big as is the build of the door, to a towering chamber in the house of a rich man, strongly fitted with bars, of such size was the spread of his wings on either side. He swept through the city, appearing on the right hand, and the people looking upon him were uplifted, and the hearts made glad in the breasts of all of them. Now in the urgent haste the old man mounted into his chariot, and drove out through the forecourt and the thundering close. Before him the mules hauled the wagon on its 4 wheels, Idaeus, the sober-minded, driving them, and behind him the horses came on as the old man laid the lash upon them and urged them rapidly through the town, and all his kinsmen were following, much lamenting, as if he went to his death. When the 2 men had gone down through the city and out, and come to the flat land, The rest of them turned back to go to Ilion, the sons and the sons-in-law. And Zeus of the wide brows failed not to notice the two as they showed in the plain. He saw the old man and took pity upon him, and spoke directly to his beloved son Hermes.
Hermes, for to you,
beyond all others, it is dearest to be man's companion, and you listen to whom you will. Go now on your way, and so guide Priam inside the hollow ships of the Achaeans, that no man shall see him, none be aware of him of the other Danaans, till he's come to the son of Peleus, right to Achilles' tent. He spoke, nor disobeyed him the courier Argiphontes, Hermes. Immediately he bound upon his feet the fair sandals, golden and immortal, that carried him over the water as over the dry land of the mane abreast of the wind's blast. He caught up the staff with which he mazes the eyes of those mortals whose eyes he would maze, or wakes again with the sleepers. Holding this in his hands, strong Argiphontes winged his way onward until he came suddenly to Troy in the Hellespont, and there walked on, and there took the likeness of a young man, a noble with beard new grown, which is the most graceful time of young manhood. Now when the two had driven past the great tomb of Ilus, that's where they had their council one night, line 350, they stayed their mules and horses to water them in the river, for by this time darkness had descended on the land, and the herald made out Hermes, who was coming toward them at a short distance. He lifted his voice and spoke aloud to Priam, "Take thought, son of Dardanus, here is work for a mind that is careful. I see a man. I think he will presently tear us to pieces. Come, then, let us run away with our horses, or if not, then clasp his knees and entreat him to have mercy upon us." So he spoke, and the old man's mind was confused. He was badly frightened, and the hairs stood up all over his gnarled body, and he stood staring, line 360, but the kindly god himself, coming closer, took the old man's hand and spoke to him and asked him a question. "Where, my father, are you thus guiding your mules and horses through the immortal night while other mortals are sleeping? Have you no fear of the Achaeans, whose wind is fury, who hate you, who are your enemies, and are near? For if one of these were to see you, how are you conveying so many treasures through the swift black night? What then could you think of? You are not young yourself, and he who attends you is aged, for beating off any man who might pick a quarrel with you. But I will do you no harm myself." Remember, this is Hermes speaking to Priam and his elderly driver. "I will even keep off another who would. You seem to me like a beloved father." In answer to him again spoke aged Priam the godlike, "Yes, in truth, dear child, all this is much as you tell me. Yet still there is some god who has held his hand above me, who sent such a wayfarer as you to meet me, an omen of good, for such you are by your form, your admired beauty and the wisdom in your mind. Your parents are fortunate in you." Then in turn answered him the courier Argiphontes, Hermes the messenger. "Yes, old sir, all this that you said is fair and orderly, but come, tell me this thing and recite it to me accurately." Line 380. "Can it be you convey those treasures in all their numbers and beauty to outland men so that they can be kept still safe for you?" Are you trying to sneak them out of the city to keep them away from the Greeks? "Or are all of you by now abandoning sacred Ilion in fear? Such a one was he who died, the best man among you, your son, who was never wanting when you fought against the Achaeans." Line 385. In answer to him again spoke aged Priam the godlike, "But who are you, O best of men, and who are your parents, since you spoke of my ill-starred son's death and with honor?" Then in turn answered him the courier Argiphontes, "You try me out, aged sir. You ask me of glorious Hector, whom many a time my eyes have seen in the fighting, where men win glory, and also on that time when he drove back the Argives on their ships and kept killing them with the stroke of the sharp bronze, and we stood by and wondered at him, for then Achilles would not let us fight by reason of his anger at Agamemnon. For I am Achilles' henchman, and the same strong-wrought vessel brought us here, and I am a Myrmidon." Remember Hermes lies. "And my father, Polyctor, a man of substance, but aged as you are. He has 6 sons besides, and I am the 7th, and shook lots with the other, and it was my lot to come on this venture," line 400. "But now I've come to the plain away from the ships, for at daybreak the glancing-eyed Achaeans will do battle around the city. They chafe from sitting here too long, so they're itching to have battle. Nor have the Achaeans, kings, the strength to hold them back as they break for the fighting." In answer to him again spoke aged Priam the godlike, If then you are henchman to Peleus Achilles, come, tell me the entire truth, and whether my son lies still beside the ships, or whether by now he's been hewn limb from limb and thrown before the dogs by Achilles. Then in turn answered him the courier Argiphontes, Hermes, aged sir, neither have any dogs eaten him, nor have the birds, but he lies yet beside the ship of Achilles at the shelters, and as he was, now here is the 12th dawn he has lain there, nor does his flesh decay, nor do worms feed on him, they who devour men who have fallen in battle. It is true, Achilles drags him at random around his beloved companion's tomb, as dawn on dawn appears, so every morning. Yet he cannot mutilate him. You yourself can see when you go there how fresh with dew he lies, and the blood is all washed from him, nor is there any corruption, and all the wounds have been closed up where he was struck, since many drove the bronze in his body. Remember, he got stabbed all over the place. So it is that the blessed immortals care for your son, though he is nothing but a dead man, because in their hearts they loved him. He spoke, and the old man was made joyful and answered him, saying, My child, surely it is good to give the immortals their due gifts, because my own son, if ever I had one, never forgot in his halls the gods who live on Olympus. Therefore they remembered him even in death's stage. Come then, accept at my hands this beautiful drinking cup, and give me protection for my body, and with the gods' grace be my escort until I make my way to the shelter of the son of Peleus. In turn answered him the courier Argiphontes, You try me out, aged sir, for I am young, but you will not persuade me, telling me to accept your gifts when Achilles does not know. I fear him at heart and have too much reverence to rob him. Such a thing might be to my sorrow hereafter, but I would be your escort and take good care of you, even till I come to glorious Argos in a fast ship or following on foot, and none would fight you because he despised your escort. The kind god spoke, line 440, and sprang up beside the horses and into the chariot and rapidly caught in his hands the lash and the guide reins and breathed great strength into the mules and horses. Now, after they had got to the fortifications about the ships and the ditch, there were sentries who had just begun to make ready their dinner. But about these, the courier Argiphontes drifted sleep on all and quickly opened the gate and shoved back the door bars and brought in Priam and the glorious gifts on the wagon. But when they had got to the shelter of Peleus' son, a towering shelter the Myrmidons had built for their king, hewing the timbers of pine, and they made a roof of thatch above it, shaggy with grass that they had gathered out of their meadows, and around it made a great courtyard for their king, with hedge poles set close together. The gate was secured by a single door piece of pine, and three Achaeans could ram it home in its socket, and three could pull back and open the huge door bar. Three other Achaeans, that is, but Achilles all by himself could close it. At this time, Hermes, the kind god, opened the gate for the old man, and brought in the glorious gifts for Peleus' son, the swift-footed, and dismounted to the ground from behind the horses, and spoke forth. Aged sir, line 460, I who came to you am a god immortal, Hermes. And remember, he just pushed open the gate that only Achilles can push open, otherwise it takes three. My father sent me down to guide and go with you, but now I am going back again, and I will not go in before the eyes of Achilles, for it would make others angry for an immortal god, so to face mortal men with favor. But you go in yourself and clasp the knees of Peleon Achilles, and entreat him in the name of his father, the name of his mother, of the lovely hair, and his child, and so move the spirit within him. So Hermes spoke, and went away to the height of Olympus. But Priam vaulted down to the ground from behind the horses and left Idaeus where he was, for he stayed behind, holding in hand the horses and mules. The old man made straight for the dwelling where Achilles, the beloved of Zeus, was sitting. He found him inside, and his companions were sitting apart, as two only, Automedon the hero and Alcimus, Scion of Ares, were busy beside him. He had just now got through with his dinner. Okay, this is the first time he ate. He's been fasting. He just broke his 12-day fast. Line 475. He had just now got through with his dinner, with eating and drinking, and the table still stood by. Tall Priam came in unseen by the other men and stood close beside him, and caught the knees of Achilles in his arms, and kissed the hands that were dangerous and manslaughtering, and had killed so many of his sons. And what was it like? As when dense disaster closes on one who has murdered a man in his own land, and he comes to the country of others, to a man of substance, and wonder seizes on those who behold him, so Achilles wondered as he looked on Priam, a godlike man, and the rest of them wondered also and looked at each other. Line 485. But now Priam spoke to him in the words of a suppliant. Achilles, like the gods, remember your father, one who is of years like mine, and on the doorsill of sorrowful old age, and they who dwell nearby encompass him and afflict him, nor is there any to defend him against the wrath, the destruction. Yet surely he, when he hears of you and that you're still living, is gladdened within his heart, and all his days he is hopeful that he will see his beloved son come home from the Troad. But for me, my destiny was evil. I have had the noblest of sons in Troy, but I say not one of them is left to me. 50 were my sons when the sons of the Achaeans came here. 19 were born to me from the womb of a single mother, and other women bore the rest in my palace. And of these, violent Ares broke the strength in the knees of most of them. But one was left me who guarded my city and people, that one you killed a few days since as he fought in defense of his country, Hector, for whose sake I come now to the ships of the Achaeans to win him back from you, and I bring you gifts beyond number. Honor then the gods, Achilles, and take pity on me, remembering your father, and yet I'm still more pitiful. Line 505. I have gone through what no other mortal on earth has gone through. I put my lips to the hands of the man who has killed my children. So here's Priam, the king of Troy, kissing the hands of Achilles. So he spoke, and stirred in the other a passion of grieving for his own father. He took the old man's hand and pushed him gently away, and the two remembered as Priam sat huddled at the feet of Achilles and wept close for manslaughtering Hector. And Achilles wept now for his own father, now again for Patroclus. The sound of their mourning moved in the house. Then, when great Achilles had taken full satisfaction in sorrow, and the passion for it had gone from his mind and body, so they cried themselves out, thereafter he rose from his chair, and took the old man by the hand, and set him on his feet again, in pity for the gray head and the gray beard, and spoke to him and addressed him in winged words. Ah, unlucky! Surely you have had much evil to endure in your spirit. How could you dare to come alone to the ships of the Achaeans, and before my eyes, when I'm the one who's killed in such numbers, such brave sons of yours? The heart in you is iron. Come then, and sit down upon this chair, and you and I will even let our sorrows lie still in the heart for all our grieving. There is not any advantage to be won from grim lamentation. Such is the way, and this is an illustration, line 525, of the great despair of the Greek worldview. Such is the way the gods spun life for unfortunate mortals, that we live in unhappiness, but the gods themselves have no sorrows. There are two urns that stand on the doorsill of Zeus. They are unlike for the gifts they bestow, an urn of evils, an urn of blessings. If Zeus, who delights in thunder, mingles these and bestows them on man, he shifts and moves now in evil, again in good fortune. But when Zeus bestows from the urn of sorrows, he makes a failure of man, and evil hunger drives him over the shining earth, and he wanders respected neither of gods nor mortals. Such were the shining gifts given by the gods to Peleus from his birth, who outshone all men besides for his riches and pride of possession, and was lord over the Myrmidons. There, too, the gods bestowed an immortal wife on him, his mother Thetis, who was mortal, bestowed an immortal wife on him who was mortal. But even on him the god piled evil also. There was not any generation of strong sons born to him in his great house, but a single, all untimely child he had. And I give him no care as he grows old, since far from the land of my fathers I sit here in Troy. And so he just listened to Priam tell him about his 50 sons. So Achilles tells him about what a wonderful father he had, so wonderful that the immortals gave him an immortal wife, and all he got was one all untimely child. And the child he has, Achilles, doesn't give him any care as he grows old, because he's sitting in Troy for 9 years. Line 542. And bring nothing but sorrow to you and your children. And you, old sir, we are told you prospered once, for as much as Lesbos, Macar's hold, confines to the north above it, and Phrygia to the north confines, and enormous Hellespont, of these, old sir, you were lord, once in your wealth and your children. But now the Uranian gods brought us, and who are the Uranian gods? Would be Hades, and an affliction upon you. Forever there is fighting about your city and men killed. But bear up, nor mourn endlessly in your heart, for there is not anything to be gained from grief for your son. You will never bring him back. Sooner you must go through yet another sorrow. In answer to him again spoke aged Priam the godlike, Do not, beloved of Zeus, make me sit on a chair, while Hector lies yet forlorn among the shelters, rather with all speed, give him back, so my eyes may behold him, and accept the ransom we bring you, which is great. You may have joy of it, and go back to the land of your own fathers, since once you've permitted me to go on living myself and continue to look on the sunlight. Then, looking darkly at him, spoke swift-footed Achilles. Line 560. No longer stir me up, old sir. I myself am minded to give Hector back to you. A messenger came to me from Zeus, my mother, she who bore me, the daughter of the seas ancient. I know you, Priam, in my heart, and it does not escape me that some god led you to the running ships of the Achaeans, for no mortal would dare come to our encampment, and not even one strong in youth. He would not get by the pickets. He could not lightly unbar the bolt that secures our gateway. Remember the bolt that takes three men. Therefore you must not further make my spirit move in my sorrows. For fear, old sir, I might not let you alone in my shelter, suppliant as you are, and be guilty before the god's orders. He spoke, and the old man was frightened and did as he told him. The son of Peleus bounded to the door of the house like a lion, nor went alone, but the two henchmen following, attending, the hero Automedon and Alcimus, those whom Achilles honored beyond all companions after Patroclus dead. These two, now set free from under the yoke, the mules and the horses, and led inside the herald, the old king's crier, and gave him a chair to sit in. Then, from the smooth, polished mule wagon, lifted out the innumerable spoils for the head of Hector, but left inside it two great cloaks and a fine-spun tunic to shroud the corpse in when they carried him home. Then Achilles called out to his serving maids to wash the body and anoint it all over, but take it first aside, since otherwise Priam might see his son and in his heart's sorrow, not holding his anger at the sight, and the deep heart in Achilles be shaken to anger. Okay, if Priam saw his son Hector all filthy dirty from being drug in the dirt, then he might get angry, and then Achilles might be angry, and then, line 585, of course, he might be shaken to anger, and he does not want to kill Priam, but he might not kill Priam, and then be guilty before the god's orders. Thus, when the serving maids had washed the corpse and anointed it with olive oil, they threw a fair great cloak and a tunic about him, and Achilles himself lifted him and laid him on a litter, and his friends helped him lift it to the smooth polished mule wagon. He groaned then and called by name on his beloved companion. Be not angry with me, Patroclus, if you discover, though you be in the house of Hades, that I gave back great Hector to his loved father, for the ransom he gave me was not unworthy. I will give you your share of the spoils, as much as is fitting. Line 595. So spoke great Achilles, and went back into the shelter and sat down on the elaborate couch from which he had risen, against the inward wall, and now spoke his word to Priam. Your son is given back to you, aged sir, as you asked it. He lies on a bier. When dawn shows, you yourself shall see him as you take him away. Now you and I must remember our supper. For even Niobe, she of the lovely tresses, remembered to eat, whose 12 children were destroyed in her palace, 6 daughters and 6 sons in the pride of their youth, whom Apollo killed with arrows from his silver bow, being angered with Niobe, and shaft-showering Artemis killed the daughters, because Niobe likened herself to Leto of the fair coloring, and said Leto had borne only 2, she herself had borne many. But the 2, although they were only 2, destroyed all those others. And so Niobe, we don't want to be not like Niobe. 9 days long they lay in their blood, nor was there anyone to bury them, for the son of Cronos made stones out of the people. But on the 10th day the Uranian gods buried them. But she remembered to eat when she was worn out with weeping, and now somewhere among the rocks in the lonely mountains in Sipylus, where they say is the resting place of the goddesses who are nymphs and dance beside the waters of Achilles, there, stone still, she broods on the sorrows that the gods gave her. Come then, we also, aged magnificent sir, must remember to eat, and afterwards you may take your beloved son back to Ilion and mourn for him, and he will be much lamented. Line 620. So spoke fleet Achilles and sprang to his feet and slaughtered a gleaming sheep, and his friends skinned it and butchered it fairly and cut up the meat expertly into small pieces and spitted them, put them on a spit, and roasted all carefully and took off the pieces. Automedon took the bread and set it out on the table in fair baskets, while Achilles served the meat. And thereon they put their hands to the good things that lay ready before them. But when they had put aside their desire for eating and drinking, Priam, son of Dardanus, gazed upon Achilles, wondering at his size and beauty, for he seemed like an outright vision of gods, because Achilles was a demigod. Achilles, in turn, gazed on Dardanian Priam and wondered, as he saw his brave looks and listening to him talking. But when they had taken their fill of gazing one on the other, first of the two to speak was the aged man, Priam the godlike. Line 635. Give me, beloved of Zeus, a place to sleep presently, so that we may even go to bed and take the pleasure of sweet sleep. For my eyes have not closed underneath my lids since that time when my son lost his life beneath your hand, 12 days ago. But always I have been grieving and brooding over my numberless sorrows and wallowed in the muck about my courtyard's enclosure, because remember, he's been rolling around in the poo-poo. And now I have tasted food again and have let the gleaming wine go down my throat. Before, I had tasted nothing, so he also had been fasting. He spoke, and Achilles ordered his serving maids and companions to make a bed in the porch's shelter and to lay upon it fine underbedding of purple royal color, and spread blankets above it and fleecy robes to be an all-over covering. The maidservants went forth from the main house, and in their hands held torches and set to work, and presently had two beds made. Achilles of the swift feet now looked at Priam and said, sarcastic, line 650, "Sleep outside, aged sir and good friend, for fear some Achaean might come in here on a matter of counsel, since they keep coming and sitting by me, and making plans as they are supposed to. But if one of these come through the fleeting black night should notice you, he would go straight and tell Agamemnon, shepherd of the people, and there would be delay in the ransoming of the body. But come, tell me this, and count off for me exactly how many days you intend for the burial of great Hector. Tell me, so I myself shall stay still and hold back the people. Tell me how long you want for the funeral, and we will not fight for that many days." Line 659. In answer to him again spoke aged Priam the godlike, "If you are willing that we accomplish a complete funeral for great Hector, this, Achilles, is what you could do and give me pleasure, for you know surely how we are pinned in our city, and wood is far to bring in from the hills, and the Trojans are frightened badly. At 9 days we would keep him in our palace and mourn him, and bury him on the 10th day, and the people feast by him, and on the 11th day we would make the grave barrel for him, and on the 12th day fight again, if so we must do." Then in turn swift-footed, brilliant Achilles answered him, "Then all this, aged Priam, shall be done as you ask it. I will hold off our attack for as much time as you bid me." So he spoke, and took the aged king by the right hand at the wrist, so that his heart might have no fear. Then these two, Priam and the herald, who were both men of close counsel, slept in the place outside the house in the porch's shelter. But Achilles slept in the inward corner of the strong-built shelter, and at his side lay Briseis of the fair coloring. Now the rest of the gods and men who were lords of chariots slept night long, with the easy bondage of slumber upon them. Only sleep had not caught Hermes, the kind god, who pondered now in his heart the problem of how to escort King Priam from the ships and not be seen by the devoted gate wardens. He got him in, now he has to figure out how to get him out. He stood above his head and spoke a word to him, saying, "Aged sir, you can have no thought of evil from the way you sleep. Still, among your enemies, now Achilles has left you unharmed. You have ransomed now your dear son and given much for him, but the sons you left behind would give 3 times as much ransom for you, who are alive, were Atreus' son Agamemnon to recognize you, and all the other Achaeans learn of you." So Hermes whispers this to Priam, that if Agamemnon spotted you, your sons would have to give 3 times this to get you back. He spoke, and the old man was afraid, and wakened his herald, and lightly Hermes harnessed for them the mules and the horses, and himself drove them through the encampment, and no man knew of them. But when they came to the crossing place of the fair running river of whirling Xanthus, a stream whose father was Zeus the immortal, There, Hermes left them and went away to the height of Olympus, and Dawn, she of the yellow robe, scattered over all earth as they drove their horses on to the city with lamentation and clamor while the mules drew the body. Nor was any other aware of them at the first. No man, no fair-girdled woman, only Cassandra, a girl like Aphrodite the Golden, who had gone up to the height of the Pergamus. So she'd gone up to the height of the citadel. And of course, Cassandra is one of Priam's daughters, and she is the prophetess. She has the gift of prophecy. Apollo gave her this, promised that if she would be his girlfriend, and she changed her mind. So he gave her prophecy, but it's prophecy no one believes. So only she, from the high Pergamus, the citadel, can see Priam returning from the Greek camp with Hector's body. Line 700, she saw her dear father standing in the chariot, his herald and crier with him. She saw Hector drawn by the mules on a litter. She cried out then in sorrow and spoke to the entire city. Come, men of Troy and Trojan women, look upon Hector. If ever before you were joyful when you saw him, come back living from battle, for he was a great joy to his city and all his people. She spoke, and there was no man left there in all the city nor woman, but all were held in sorrow passing endurance. They met Priam beside the gates as he brought the dead in. First among them were Hector's wife and his honored mother, who tore their hair and ran up beside the smooth rolling wagon and touched his head. And the multitude wailing stood there about them. And now and there in front of the gates they would have lamented all day till the sun went down and let their tears fall for Hector, except the old man spoke from the chariot to his people. Give me way to get through with my mules. Then afterwards you may sate yourselves with mourning when I have him inside the palace. So he spoke, and they stood apart and made way for the wagon. And when they had brought him inside the renowned house, they laid him then on a carved bed, and seated beside him the singers who were to lead the melody in the dirge. And the singers chanted the song of sorrow, and the women were mourning beside them. Andromache of the white arms led the lamentation of the women, and held in her arms the head of man-slaughtering Hector. Line 725. My husband, you were lost young from life, and have left me a widow in your house, and the boy is only a baby who was born to you and me, the unhappy. I think he will never come of age, for before then, head to heel, this city will be sacked, for you its defender are gone, you who guarded the city and the grave wives and the innocent children, wives who before long must go away in the hollow ships, and among them I shall also go. And you, my child, follow where I go, and there do much hard work that is unworthy of you, drudgery for a hard master. Or else some Achaean will take you by hand and hurl you from the tower into horrible death, in anger because Hector once killed his brother or his father or his son. There were so many Achaeans whose teeth bit the vast earth, beaten down by the hands of Hector. Your father was no merciful man in the horror of battle. Therefore your people are grieving for you all through their city, Hector. And you left for your parents mourning and sorrow beyond words. But for me, passing all others, is left the bitterness and the pain. For you did not die in bed and stretch your arms to me, nor tell me some last intimate word that I could remember. And so here Andromache is just wishing she had some last word. Some last word that I could remember always, all the nights and days of my weeping for you. So she spoke in tears, and the women were mourning about her. Now Hecabe let out the thronging chant of their sorrow. Hector, of all my sons, the dearest by far to my spirit, while you still lived for me, you were dear to the gods, and even in the stage of death they cared about you still. There were others of my son, whom at times swift-footed Achilles captured, and he would sell them as slaves far across the unresting salt water, into Samos and Imbros and Lemnos in the gloom of the mists. You, when he had taken your life with the thin edge of the bronze sword, he dragged again and again around his beloved companion's tomb, Patroclus, whom you killed, but even so did not bring him back to life. Now you lie in the palace, handsome and fresh with dew, in the likeness of one whom he of the silver bow Apollo has attacked and killed with his gentle arrows. So she spoke in tears and wakened the endless morning. Line 760. Third and last, Helen led the song of sorrow among them. Hector, of all my lord's brothers, dearest by far to my spirit, My husband is Alexandrus, like an immortal who brought me here to Troy, and I should have died before I came with him. And here now is the 20th year upon me since I came from the place where I was, forsaking the land of my fathers. That 20th year in line 765, don't ask me to figure it out because I can't. In this time, I've never heard a harsh saying from you, nor an insult. No, but when another, one of my lord's brothers or sisters, a fair-robed wife of some brother, would say a harsh word to me in the palace, or my lord's mother, but his father was always gentle, a father indeed, then you would speak and put them off and restrain them by your own gentleness of heart and your gentle words. So Hector always stuck up for Helen. Therefore I mourn for you in sorrow of heart, and mourn also myself and my ill luck. There was no other in all the wide Troad who was kind to me, and my friend, all others shrank when they saw me. So she spoke in tears, and the vast populace grieved with her. Now Priam the aged king spoke forth his word to the people. Now, men of Troy, bring timber into the city, and let not your hearts fear a close ambush of the Argives. Achilles promised me, line 780, as he sent me on my way from the black ships, that none should do us injury until the 12th dawn comes. He spoke, and they harnessed to their wagons, their mules, and their oxen, and presently were gathered in front of the city. 9 days they spent bringing in an endless supply of timber. But when the 10th dawn had shone forth with her light upon mortals, they carried out bold Hector, weeping, and set the body aloft a towering pyre for burning, and set fire to it. But when the young dawn showed again with her rosy fingers, the people gathered around the pyre of illustrious Hector. Line 790. But when all were gathered to one place and assembled together, first with gleaming wine, they put out the pyre that was burning, all where the fury of the fire still was in force, and thereafter the brothers and companions of Hector gathered the white bones up, mourning, as the tears swelled and ran down their cheeks. Then they laid what they had gathered up in a golden casket, and wrapped this about with soft robes of purple, and presently put it away in the hollow of the grave, and over it piled huge stones laid close together. Lightly and quickly they piled up the grave barrow, and on all sides were set watchmen, for fear the strong grieved Achaeans might too soon set upon them. They piled up the grave barrow and went away, and thereafter assembled in a fair gathering, and held a glorious feast within the house of Priam, king under God's hand. Such was their burial of Hector, breaker of horses. And thus ends our adventure in Homer's Iliad.